Firefighters issue warning after man gets penis stuck in gym weights.
Okay. In the gym weights?
In the gym weights.
What kind of gym weights?
The big, massive...
Will we start then?
Aye, go for it. I've got a wee thing first as well. 2 seconds.
I didn't want to know.
Hi folks, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 4 of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave.
Good evening, Derek. How are you?
I'm not bad. Yourself?
I am absolutely fan-bloody-tastic and in holiday mode. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Just rub it in. I've came back my holidays in Euroway again.
It is, and see, this morning I finished up for 30, that's 33 days... Three zero days annual leave from work, and we're about to embark on a tremendous holiday that we've been organising for about the last sort of 4 years. So I can't wait to Friday morning, mate. I'm so looking forward to it.
My heart's pumping shit for you.
I'll send you a postcard.
I'm sure you'll have a good time. So we've got two games to cover this week. Just before we do, though, we have to pay tribute to this guy here, because he is an absolute legend, and he can best be summed up by, I'll let you hear what he said himself.
When I was a young boy growing up, I wanted to be a footballer, and I was determined to be a footballer, and I made it to the top. When I finished playing football, I wanted to work in the media, and I've made it to the top. I'm doing Champions League games, working for the BBC, doing big, big radio gigs.
There we go. Big, big radio gigs. How the hell can we compete against that?
We really can't, Derek. I mean, I think we'd just be as well geeing up right now.
So, right now, we pay tribute to John Hartson, you fanny. Seriously, who comes away with big, big radio gigs?
Well, he did say to Derek, he's now working for BBC, so well, you know what I mean? That's perfectly acceptable.
Says it all, doesn't it?
It really does. There's only one way it can go now, and that's to be Chris Sutton's sidekick on BT Sports.
Oh, we've got Ali McCoist for that, though.
Oh, aye, well.
Yes, so on that note, we will go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. Just before we get into the games, just to round up the last of the transfer window, it wasn't that exciting, to be honest, for us. We signed Cardiff City defender Declan John on a season-long loan, and he comes in at left-back, and Joe Dodoo has joined Charlton on loan. I can't remember if that's till January or a season-long loan, so... But a bit disappointing for Dodo, because I thought that, you know, he was meant to be the standout player that Pedro had said at the start when he came in.
I think we all, you know, were maybe expecting, because again, a bit of an impact player, Derek. You know, he was, you know, when he had his goals against Aberdeen last season, and obviously the game against Partick, we were all hoping. You know, they would maybe get a wee run in the team. I'm quite surprised that he's not kept him, Derek, because we are lacking up front. We were desperate to sign another striker in the transfer window, and you know, we didn't sign anybody, so it was maybe the perfect opportunity to let Dodoo, you know, come in, you know, even to be on the bench and stuff like that to try and push his way into the first team, because it's not as if he's no had the taste of playing for the first team yet. So a wee bit disappointed. I hope he does well, Derek, because I don't want us to get rid of Dodu.
No.
So, and I know he scored on his debut for Charlton. He came on as a substitute and scored for them. So I hope he does well, gets match fit, starts scoring goals to get his confidence up, because I do think that he could still be a big player for us.
Certainly. So just need to see how that pans out.
Yes.
Right, so the first game we've got here was on Saturday the 9th of September. It was a 4-1 win at home against Dundee.
Yep.
Obviously, I missed the game, so I gave my ticket to one of our good friends. And I watched the game in the Bluebell Bar in Tenerife.
Quality, excellent setting, Derek.
Yes, certainly was. And also, and I'm kind of gutted again because it's the second year in a row this has happened, I missed the Armed Forces Day. I was away at a family wedding last year and I was away on holiday this year, so hopefully next year there'll be no interruptions and I get to
yes.
So obviously there was a lot of good things going on there, a lot of charity events. The RAF troops abseiled from the Sandy Jardine stand at the start of the game to hand the ball to the ref. A fantastic turnout again from all the armed forces there. Over 200 armed forces members in attendance. Yep. Military pipe band at half time, and we've been recognised for our support of the forces also.
Yeah.
Despite this and our charity for them all, the usual idiots still wanted to have a go. One complete idiot wanted Rangers brought up on some sort of charge for having it. I don't know which charge that could have been.
Bizarre. I was waiting on you telling me what the reasoning was in that, Derek, but I take it there's none. Just wants us charged.
Wants us charged with something. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
And then another idiot who apparently was an ex-member of the forces himself thought it was disgusting that a football club was getting involved in such a thing. He kind of, what it turned out to be, appeared to have some sort of gripe with the government not supporting veterans more, and it was, you know, football clubs, you know, giving charity. It shouldn't be a football club's job. Well, yeah, the valid point, you know, the government should be doing more to support them, but he was having a go at Rangers for actually helping charities out. And when I pointed this out, he gave him a right to reply and just blocked me. So,
Okay. I think it's more the recognition as well, Derek, that we're given also, you know, which is fantastic. It's not, you know, it's not just about the charities and stuff like that. It's, you know, we are, you know, recognising what these men and women are doing for us. And it's, I think it's a fantastic tribute that we give. And haters are going to hate, Derek. We've been saying it for a while. Any excuse to try and put the boot in. Surprised that Graham Spears does. They came away with his usual spiel that he does every year about it, but wait. No, it was a great occasion again, Derek, and well done to Rangers and everybody involved.
Yep. So in the team we lined up: Fodingham, Tavernier, Cardoso, Alves, Wallace, Candias, Dorans, Jack, Cranchar, Morelos and Miller. On the subs bench we had Anik, Wilson, Rossiter, Nemain, Windass, Pena and Herrera. On the third minute, free kick by Candias into the box, header by Morelos over the bar. Right after that, Jack had a great pass to Kenny Miller. Miller ran with the ball into the box. It was intercepted out for the corner just before shooting. It was a good effort, but he should have released the ball. He should have shot the ball earlier for, I think, what we all thought.
Yep.
Eighth minute, fantastic quick pass from Fodingham to Candias on the right wing. Took the ball forward, held the ball up well. Great cross to Morelos, who shoots, and it was a good save by the keeper. Well worked effort.
It
there,
was the vision by Fodingham. I mean, I think that's something that he's got over a lot of other goalkeepers, Derek, because he's got the ability to start, you know, an attack from way back in his own box. You know, that was something that I think had been getting drilled into him even when Mark Warburton brought him in, but it was good to see that happen, and we've actually, you know, got players that can carry that out now in the likes of Candias, you know, so that was excellent.
I think in terms of that, one thing Fodingham was criticised for before was his, you know, slow pass out. He was, you know, allowing everybody to get back up the field,
yep.
But, you know, this was one occasion, and I think this season especially, he seems to have sorted that game out. It might be the fact the players are, you know, more often than not, are moving a lot more for him now as well, so
yeah, definitely.
Yep. On the 11th shot, in the 11th minute, there was a curling shot from 19 yards just right by the right hand post from Cranchar. Mm-hmm. 21st minute, Candias crosses the ball in, it's saved from the keeper, out to Cranchar who shoots, and another save out for the corner. On the 26th minute, Morelos shot from the edge of the box over the bar. 36th minute, a good break which we were given advantage for a foul. Morelos on the left hand side of the box has a shot from a tight angle and hits the side net and should have maybe done better there. And complete hilarity on the 37th minute, Scott Allen substituted.
Yeah, I've seen that, Derek. Now, is that basically because he was having a poor game, or was he carrying an injury, or
I think the,
did he no handle the...
I think the line that McCann gave out is he was struggling and there was no indication that he was injured, so I think he was just struggling in the game. So
aye. Get it right.
Exactly. And on the 40th minute, not long before half time, we went 1-0 up with who else but Morelos. Lovely interplay between Morelos, knocking it down to Miller, then again to Candias with a superb turn and a back pass back to Morelos in the box, who has a blistering first time shot past the keeper.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was great attacking play, Derek, and you know he's turning out to be a real star for us. This guy, really, really pleased for him, and another really good goal.
Yep. Into half time, and we've seen obviously the pipe band as we've seen, but also a very surprising sight of Broxy, Roxy, and Boris.
Exactly, and just like you said, Derek, we've been getting fed a pack of lies by the Heart and Hand podcast here when they told us that they'd all been sold, or a few of them had been sold. But yep, that's right. And as I said to you before, we've now been tagged into some Twitter discussion about it all, and I don't know how that's happened, but yep, I certainly noticed that, and I was laughing at the wee tweets that you were putting out as well.
I think there should be a new Mark Daly documentary. It's not the men who sold the jerseys, it's the men who sold the bear suits.
Derek, I wouldn't even laugh about that, because if we could find a negative in that story, it's the first thing that Mark Daly would jump on, so I wouldn't joke about that, mate.
Probably not, no. Anyway, into the second half, just straight off the bat, there was a header just wide of the post by Dundee, so
yeah.
They thought they were going to be more up for it in this half,
yep.
And you know, they certainly started that way. Anyway, a minute after that, though, we had a snapshot on the edge of the box by Kenny Miller. It was an easy save, though, by the keeper, because it was right at the keeper. 49th minute was a great break. We were 3-on-3. Morelos tried to pass with the outside of the foot, hits the defender and out for the corner. He really should have done better with it, because we had a good break.
He did, Derek. He had better options on than what he tried to do, but you know, the guy's got the confidence to try wee things like that. So, you know, fair enough on his part. But I thought that we really should have capitalised on that.
Yep. And on the 52nd minute, there was a shot by Cranchar in the box, forced a good save from the keeper. This was, you know, he never done a lot right in the game, to be honest. This is maybe one of the only things, and it was quite clear that he needed substituted. And that was, funnily enough, his last kick of the ball, effectively, because he came off a minute later. And yep. Dean Windass, no, there wasn't Dean Windass. I was going to say Sean Windass. I don't know who that was.
Sean Windass. I don't know where you're going with this, Derek.
Yes.
But
the son of Dean Windass came on for us in the 33rd minute. No, it was the 53rd minute.
Right,
so I'll say this all again. And on the 53rd minute, Cranshaw came off and Windass came on. Though on the 60th minute, there was good play working the ball from right to left, passing to Miller on the left side of the box, who was clearing space. It's a weak first-time shot right at the keeper. Again, you know, Miller had no done a lot right all game. He was, you know, sclaffing shots. He wasn't getting the rub of the ball all the time.
Yeah.
He was hitting poor shots. So he came off on the 62nd minute, and Penna came on for him.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
On the 63rd minute, good work down the left flank. Good dink cross by Windass. Finds the head of Penna. Forces a save from the keeper. 66th minute, good chance for Dundee with the ball flashing by the post after a header. The player running in couldn't get to it. It really should have been a goal. That was the big wake-up call for us.
That was a big miss for them, that one.
A minute later, we went 2-0 up with Windass getting the goal. Great cross from the right-hand side of the box from Candias. He looked up, found Windass in the box, he got ahead of the ball, into the back of the net. Good goal, all-round goal.
Yep, no, it was, and he directed his header very well for Windass. I thought he made a big impression when he came on, actually. Derek was a good impact player. He caused them problems straight away, and as you say, standout for me in the game, Candias. He was outstanding and another fantastic ball into the box, and you know, good goal.
Yep. 69th minute, good interplay between Wallace and Windass. Wallace then lays the ball off to Penna on the edge of the box, has a shot over the bar. It was good play and a fairly decent effort. On the 70th minute, an absolutely shocking challenge on Candias, arguably a red card. Ref played on due to having advantage, but he never pulled it back afterwards for a yellow card. Pedro was raging and kicked the ball away due to no foul given, so it was good to see his kind of passion there.
Yeah.
But again, another shocking decision by referee.
Yes, yep. It's happening on a game-by-game basis now, Derek.
Yep, I don't mind him having mistakes, but when it's glaringly obvious things like that, it's just unforgivable, to be honest. And the 82nd minute, long range shot from Candias, it went well over the bar. However, a minute later, we got a goal and we went 3-0 up, and it was none other than Penna getting his debut goal.
Yes.
Windass and Wallace linked up on the left. Windass took the ball into the box, beat a player, passed into the middle. Penna has a touch, the touch out fox the defender, and he had a good shot into the back of the net. Fantastic. Chuffed for him as well.
Yeah, I'm really pleased for him as well. I actually thought, Derek, you could tell, you know, he's not played a lot of matches. He was trying a few passes in the game. They weren't coming off. But what I did like about him was he was getting into great positions. He was finding space. And I thought, you know, if we get this guy fully fit, you know, I think he will be a really good player for us. I did see a lot of signs that, you know, some quality there. And as you say, really pleased for him that he scored. He was unlucky as well with a couple other ones not to get in the score sheet. So good to see him getting into these positions.
Yep. And on the 85th minute, we went 4-0 up, and I missed it because of having a few pints. I was in the toilet at the time. So.
It's not
late. Not at all. It was Morelos getting his second goal. Tavernier take the ball on the left. Great ball to Morelos in the box. Takes on a player in the box. Possible cross, but it might have been a shot as well. Deflected into the net by the keeper.
Yep. When I saw it, Derek, I thought it was a cross, but he's obviously, you know, put a wee bit of spin on it. I don't know if he's meant it or no, but, you know, fair play. You know, he put the ball into a dangerous position and ended up in the back of the net, but delighted for him to get two in the one game again.
Yep, as you said, he got two in the game, and, you know, going by, you know, some of the sayings Pedro comes up away with, Old Firm Facts on Twitter had a cracking one. When the scent of wolves adorn my stubble, the buffalo will score a double.
That is quality. There should be a t-shirt with that one.
Yes. Right after the goal, Candias came off after having a good game, and yeah. Aaron Nemain got a few minutes on for his debut at Ibrox, so good to see him getting a wee run out, and I think that's what Pedro said after the game as well. However, we did concede a goal on the 88th minute. Dorans had a really weak tackle, good determination by the Dundee player, mind you, beats Alves and hits a good shot on into the bottom left corner, and it was a fairly decent shot in fairness, so just disappointing to lose the goal.
Yes. I watched it, Derek, and like I said, I thought standout for us was Candias. I thought he was like really probably the best game he's played for us, and there was some sort of stat that somebody had put up where he's apparently put in more crosses into the box in his five games than what Barry Mackay did for the whole of last season for us. I know Mackay didn't play that many games, but he certainly played a hell of a lot more than five. So, I'm really impressed with this guy, Derek. The only thing he seems to be lacking is like pure pace. But as I said, if he was an exceptionally fast player, he would be playing for one of the sort of massive teams in Europe, I think, because he has the, you know, his crossing ability is great. He seems to find his passing's fantastic. So is his touch and everything. And as I say, maybe just know the fastest, but certainly a class act for us, and really, really pleased with him so far.
Yep. Right, into the next game here. It was Friday the 15th of September. It was a 2-2 away draw to Partick. Now, we lined up more or less the same team. The only difference was that Windass came in for Cranshaw.
Yeah.
On the bench, we had Anik Wilson, Dalcio, who we thought had gone missing, Holt, Penna, Declan John and Herrera.
Yep.
Now, it started off, it was, you know, I thought that Partick were looked a wee bit more up for it than us. Certainly they yep. seemed to be the more hungrier. On the 7th minute, Wallace had a shot in the box, and from there he appeared to pick up a slight groin injury. And then on this 10th minute, he went down again after a nominal challenge. There was yeah. nothing in it, and then it appears to be that he's went out with a groin strain. So we'll just need to wait and see. He's apparently not playing for the Old Firm game, so that's him ruled out anyway for yes. a while. So that could be a tough one. Anyway, yeah. For that, Declan John got his debut quite quick off the mark. Mm-hmm. He came on for Wallace, and Kenny Miller was made the captain. Again, it was a more of a, up until we scored in the 18th minute, it was a bit of a midfield battle where I would have thought that it was kind of against the run of play, actually. I thought Partick, without actually causing any harm, they were better.
I don't know if you're being a wee bit. I thought it was very, very even at that point, Derek. I thought, again, the man that has made me eat my words, I thought that Ryan Jack was having a fantastic game for us. I mean, I only got to see the game up until just after we scored, Derek, as you know, because I was heading out to work and you were giving me updates and stuff like that. But up until what I saw, I thought that Jack was really coming into the match. He was snuffing everything out. And as you say, it was a real midfield battle, and Partick were well up for it. So I thought it was quite sort of even Steven at that point. You know, you're saying that you thought that Partick maybe had the upper hand, but me with my blue tinted glasses, I would have said that it was about even at that point when we scored.
Yeah. Well, anyway, as I said, we scored in the 18th minute. It was a great worked play to get the ball to Windass, who had a rocket of a shot off the head of a defender. I think it nearly enough knocked him out.
Yeah.
Out to the Partick player. Great tenacity from Jack to win the ball back.
Yes.
Good pass to Morelos, who took a bad first touch, but his second touch was a rocket into the goal on the right-hand side of the box. It was actually the first shot we had on target as well.
Yeah, it was, as you say, Derek, the way that he took the ball, Morelos, it kind of put the ball away from him, but he was able, the way he sort of positioned his body to get the shot in, was absolutely fantastic. And it was really, at first when you looked at the goal, you thought, aye, that's quite a good goal. But as you say, when you see the fact that his first touch, although say it was poor, but his first touch wasn't the ideal for him, and it took the ball away, but he was able to totally position himself to hit a really powerful shot right across the goalkeeper in the bottom corner. A really, really good goal. But Morelos are really fantastic. And again, like I said a short time ago, this guy's a real find for us.
Yep. We had to wait until the 32nd minutes for any notable play to happen, where it was good play leading to Morelos floating the ball into Miller to the far side of the box. Miller unselfishly laying off the ball to Windass with his chest. Windass hits a rocket of a shot. It was goal-bound. Hits off the hand of the defender in the box.
Yeah.
It's a half shout for a penalty, to be honest, because I think that it was hit at such a pace he had no chance to get his hands out of the way, but it did change the direction of the ball. So you've seen them given, you haven't seen them given, you know, you take it on the chin. In terms of Miller, it was unselfish of him, but at the same time, I thought the Miller of old would have taken it on himself,
yes,
I would have thought,
yeah,
done a wee turn and hit the shot, but you know, it's maybe a case in point where he hasn't got the touch he used to.
We'll talk about Miller after the game, Derek. I've got a couple of theories about as to why he's not been as effective as he was last season, but I'll let you go on the now.
Yep. But a minute later, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a challenge, or Jack, I thought, challenged the Partick Thistle player. I think it was a 50-50 where Jack came off worst of them.
Yeah.
Basically, yep. Jack was the one who lunged in, I thought. Partick player did appear to catch him on the foot with his studs, but again, Jack did lunge in.
Yeah,
and he did roll about 10 odd times as well. So.
Yep. I think it was a sore one that he got, but as you say, when I watched it back, you know, and when the cameras sort of slow it down, it looks a really bad tackle, but when you see it at normal pace, Derek, he does go in hard for the ball, and I don't think personally that was he didn't mean to go right in on his ankles, although, as I say, when it slows down, it looks bad. But no, as you say, it was a kind of 50-50 at that point. So.
Yeah. And on the 44th minute, it was a good run with the ball from Windass, fouled for a free kick around 20 yards from goal. It was a shocking free kick from Candias, who tried to put it under the wall. So I think the commentator said there's only two players that could do that, and one of them was Charlie Adams. So
that's right, yep, against Celtic. Yep.
Yeah. On the 46th minute, Morelos was actually fouled in the box, but had been ruled offside just before the foul. So quite correct there. Well spotted from the ref and linesman. But quite lucky from Partick as well. It was overall for the first half, it was competent enough, but we really done nothing up front. We had, you know, only a handful of shots. Only one was on target, really. Partick seemed to be more up for it, but they never really had any chances either. So
yeah, Partick sort of packed the midfield, Derek, and it was a real midfield battle in there. It was difficult for us to get going, but I felt that we should have capitalised a bit more on some of the half chances that we created. But not a poor performance, Derek, because as you say, Partick were well up for it as well. So it was a difficult first half, and to go in 1-0 up, I was quite pleased at that.
Into the second half, just as soon as we kicked off, there was a bad challenge in Candias, not picked up on. Right after that, there was a bad challenge from behind on Miller, and the player was given the yellow card. So it's, you know, where's the consistency ref? A minute later, it was good play with Tav getting the ball, good pass to Candias in the box, took a bobble before Candias managed to get a shot off, and it went just wide. So I think it was the wee bobble that put him off there. 49th minute, Partick Thistle player backed into our defender and gets a free kick for it. The TV pictures showed the exact same thing happened in the run up to that play to our. I think the Miller backed into their player and there was no foul for it. So, you know, it was the exact same thing that happened, you know. But they get the foul. Resulting free kick, I just seen that happening. The resulting free kick took a deflection off Alves into the back of the net. Really, the wall split between Alves and Morelos. Very poor wall, and it was their first shot on target as well.
And going back, Derek, to the original foul there as well, after watching it back, I think that Alves should have just went through and headed that ball right out, but he seemed to hesitate and leave it for Cardoso, and that's when, you know, he got in the pushing for the forward, and it led to the free kick. I think if Alves had just went right in there at that first instant, because I actually think that Alves was slightly closer to the ball, but he left it for Cardoso. So I'm really quite surprised with Alves there. And then, as you say, at the wall, really poor for Alves there. He would have thought that he'd have stood up. I'm not slagging the guy off, Derek. We're delighted that he's here. The guy's a class act, and you know he looks the part, but two sort of lapses in concentration by him there, and it cost us the goal.
55th minute, Miller came off, Herrera came on. Miller appeared not to be too happy about that, and Dorans took over the captaincy. On the 58th minute, it was a long range shot from distance, and it was well over the bar from Windass. And typical fashion, on the 59th minute, we went 2-1 down. Partick played down the left hand side. Declan John, nowhere to be seen. One low cross into the 6-yard box. Fodderingham, I have no idea what he was doing, but he stupidly dived out for it, missed it completely. Simple one touch tap in for the attacker. Really poor defending and even shocking keeping.
Yep. The actual goal, Derek, just before the cross comes in, you've got not just the fact of Fodringham and John, but Tavernier and Candias were both marking their players, and then the two of them just stopped. And then the players were allowed to just ghost into the back post, and it was a tap-in. So all-round calamity in the defence there, Derek. That's the alarming part for me, because it wasn't just one player. It was John was caught, you know, at the back, not in position. Fodringham could have done a lot better with the cross, because he just seemed to sort of dive very, very slowly and let it go past him. And then the marking for two players on the right was absolutely shocking as well. And, you know, it was actually quite amateurish for us, Derek, considering, you know, he spent a lot of time trying to get that defence together. It was very poor.
Yep, certainly was. On the 62nd minute, Jack came off and Penna came on. I kind of didn't agree with Jack coming off, to be honest, but I don't know if he's picked up a knock. I think from the media reports that they're saying he's good to play for the next game, then I think he did pick up a knock, so that would explain it. 66th minute, it was a shocker of a challenge on Morelos. It was high up on the shin, straight red card for the Partick Thistle player. No arguments at all there.
No, definitely not, no.
On the 72nd minute, the ball goes out for a throw-in to us. Partick Thistle won't give the Partick Thistle fans won't give the ball back. Windass gives a wee wanker gesture to them. A bit stupid, but it did kind of get the compliance officer, funnily enough, within days of the incident happening, and it was cleared up, whereas other things have been left for weeks on end, which we'll get into. But certainly he's not going to have any disciplinary for that, and he's not going to miss the next game or the Old Firm game, which is good. In the 76th minute, we went 2-2. We scored the equaliser. Superb shot from Dorans into post the stamp from about 25 yards after good skill to outfox the defender.
So it was a great goal, Derek, and that's what we've been expecting him to do for us. That was the player that, you know, the things that he was doing for Norwich City in the Premiership just a couple of seasons ago, getting forward. I realise he's not been playing as the sort of attacking midfielder. I understand that, and he's been quite quiet in certain games, but that certainly was the sort of a glimpse of the player that we're hoping that he's going to be. It was a absolutely fantastic goal by him, and the way that I think he looked more confident at that stage, Derek. Maybe it was because he was going forward, but you know, absolutely fantastic goal by Dorans, really, really tremendous.
Yep, and pretty much from there out, it was backs to the wall for the rest of the game for Partick, but we really never made the keeper make any meaningful saves after that. It was quite pathetic. We just kept having shots, but you know, they were going wide all the time. The only exception was about the 77th minute, ball floated into the box, Penner jumps and gets, I think it was a knee to it, but it was saved by the keeper. So it's hard to make, I put on Twitter, it's quite hard to make from what to take from that game, because there was spells where we were great, but we just can't, two defensive blunders really, and then you know, we can't hit a shot to save ourselves, it seems. At least we were trying, that's the only good thing I like about it. At least we were trying to take shots, but at the same time...
If only we had recalled Joe Dodo for one game, just to come off the bench, who knows what would have happened. I was disappointed, Derek, when I saw the result, and when I watched the game back and I saw the chances, I was pleased, as you say, that we were going for it. Partick did play well, Derek, I'm not taking that away from them. They made it very difficult for us. I wasn't too disheartened, obviously annoyed that we didn't win, but I was just more annoyed with the fact of the two goals that we gave away. I thought it was really poor. That was the only sort of downside in the whole thing. It was a battling game. And at the same time, if we'd have played Partick like that sort of at the start of last season, I don't think we would even have got a draw out of that game. So that's what I'm sort of trying to say to myself. But the defence needs to stop being lackadaisical. I don't know if Bruno Alves has got it in his head that, you know, in these sort of games against these teams, he can relax a wee bit more. Hopefully he's got that in his head that, no, Bruno, you really need to be a class act through every match that you play for us, because I did feel that for the two goals that Alves could have done, sorry, especially for the first goal, that he could have done a hell of a lot better, and we just seem to be lacking a bit of organisation in there, Derek. I don't know if that's what you think as well. Aye. Maybe with a wee bit more organisation in that defence, we wouldn't have got into, you know, the problems that we did. But we certainly had the upper hand in the second half. We certainly were trying to score. It just couldn't happen. But pleased that Doran scored that goal. Hopefully that'll put his confidence up now to try and do that more often during matches.
It's kind of these things where we can't play for 90 minutes. We seem to switch off in the second half. And it's not always for the full second half. I mean, this was the best part of maybe 20 minutes where we switched off, and that's where we lost the goals. And invariably, that's what happens. I don't know what happens with the team when they go into half time. They just seem to switch off after that. And they come out not the same team again. It's baffling.
I think a lot of that comes down to, if that's what starts to happen, you need to have somebody on the bench that can come on and change the game back in our favour, which is, I said that I was going to, which brings me on to Kenny Miller, Derek. Now, we all like Kenny Miller. He was outstanding for us last season, and I personally would rather see Kenny Miller coming on for the last 20 minutes, half an hour in a game for us. I think we would get the best out of him. I think he would benefit from that as well. I still don't know. He's not the reason that I think he's not bringing as much to the team now is because he's not getting played as our main out-and-out striker, which is now Morelos. I think Miller's been used to over the last few seasons as being that sort of one lone striker up front with somebody trying to support him rather than the other way about. And he's lost now, I think, in a game, Derek. He tries to come back into midfield all the time, and that's really nowhere we're needing him to be. And he has lost his confidence. And I think for the sake of him and for the sake of the team, he needs to maybe start bringing him on as a substitute, or, God forbid, anything happens to Morelos, it would be Miller playing as our main striker up front and we would get more out of him. But I certainly am not in favour of him playing the two of them at the same time. Now I think we could have an extra man in midfield battling to win the ball, and it would be a lot more productive for us. But only time will tell if that's what's going to happen. I really hope for the upcoming game that you're going to get, or the upcoming games that you get into, that we maybe change slightly and Miller does drop to the bench. I don't know if you feel the same way, Derek.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been coming for a while, I think, this. It was doing the exact same last year, where he was dropping far too deep into midfield. There's no reason for it. It's leaving our main striker up himself a lot of the time, which is not helping anyone. A lot of the time strikers need someone to play off. If he wants to drop back, that's fair enough, but he's dropping back way, way too deep. But sometimes you see him in defence, for God's sake.
Yeah.
That's not the role of a striker, is it? So, as much as I love his work ethic and he's been a good servant, even though he's played for that other half as well, there comes a time when, the loyalty thing kind of, you need to take a step back. And the fact, though, that he's effectively the vice-captain, is he really going to get dropped, especially if Wallace is going to be out now? I don't think he will.
If you look at it, Derek, imagine if we were playing the likes of Celtic, and let's say that Morelos had been, given his all the whole game and had really had a really good game and causing him all sorts of problems, but he was maybe just coming up short. Who better to bring off the bench for the last sort of 20 minutes against Celtic than Kenny Miller? Totally fresh and ready to go. I would be delighted with that, and it would cause them all sorts of bother. I think it would really benefit Miller to come on and really go for, give his all for the last 20 minutes. I think we would see the best out of him. But as you say, vice-captain now, if Wallace is out and he's out, who he doesn't get played, who does the captaincy go to after that? Is it maybe Graham Dorans or Ryan Jack?
I don't know. You've seen that Dorans was the next in line for it after Miller came off, and I know that Kashina's said that he's got five captains, but I don't know if that literally means that or
yes.
So we'll just need to wait and see that one.
Yeah.
Just on the note of Kashina, I don't want to spend too much time about it because I really can't be arsed with some of these fans that are like, Kashina out now. It's honestly pathetic. He's been given one transfer window to rebuild a full team. People still look at what happened at the end of last year with, Warburton's team, and they take that as, that's his, that's when he started. Yeah, he did obviously start then, but the players were gone back then. And I think it's seen with the very few that are actually still left in that team that the players had gone. They had left the building at that point. No manager would have been able to do anything with them by what I think.
I'm looking, Derek, to take the European result altogether, and we look at the league this season now. The game against Hibs was a farce. The whole match, we went over it, and we got beat there. We should never have been beat. The decisions with the referee were absolutely terrible, so we can't even take that into account. The game against Hearts was disappointing because we couldn't capitalise. Hearts came and basically played two banks of five to stop us from scoring. But we've not been, apart from the Hibs game, like we said, we've actually had some good results this season so far, Derek, and the fact that we were getting beat there against Partick and we brought it back to draw and we were still going for it. So I'm not getting too despondent about it. I want Pedro to do well and I'm willing to give him a chance. The only thing that I'm worried about, Derek, the fact that we didn't win that game there against Partick. I think if we had have won there was a lot said about, oh, you know, he's never won three matches in a row, you know, since he's came here. He's put himself under a bit of pressure as well, Derek, and the fact that these next two games are very important, the cup game, and then obviously we're playing them at Ibrox on Saturday. These are two huge games for Pedro, and, you know, we're all on his side. I know I'm desperate for him to do well. I'm desperate for him to win both games. If we get beat in the Celtic game, Derek, I think the pressure is on him majorly, and the people who are still undecided about him will suddenly turn and say that they're wanting him out. So two massive, massive games, and I really hope for his sake that he gets his tactics absolutely spot on for both matches.
Well, I mean, we would have said that regardless of what position we're in, and this is the thing, we're putting management and players under too much pressure, because if they're looking at this, and it's reflected in the media as well, I mean, you've seen the daggers are out for them already. I mean, they've been out for them ages ago.
Definitely.
And it's this default position of blaming the manager when something goes wrong. As somebody highlighted on Twitter, and I've reflected it as well on our Twitter feed, it wasn't Pedro Kishina that went missing when in the first goal. It wasn't Pedro Kishina that was in the wall which broke and allowed the ball to go in. Bearing in mind, that was a deflection. Yeah, it was still a goal, but it was a deflection. It's not as if, you know, he had a free shot in there. It was a deflected goal, which outfoxed the keeper that way. So, yeah, management have to take a portion of the blame, but this thing that is automatic where the manager is the one who gets it in the neck, for me, it's bullshit. And one of my mates highlighted the fact that, you know, Dale, I've never known you not to back the manager when things have gone wrong. You've always, you know, backed the manager and blamed the team. Well, yeah, because it's the team that play on the field. Yeah, you can get tactics wrong sometimes, but I don't think the tactics were wrong in the Partick Thistle game. And as I said it before about a game, you know, we were, you know, a couple of wins, all sweetness and light. As soon as we lose a game, and nobody says anything, as soon as we draw one game, you know, it's all daggers out again. And it was the exact same at the start of the year with the with a great end start of the pre-season, signing all these players, and then come the European game. Granted, it was a shocking result, and, you know, we should never have been put in that position, but, you know, we lost, and it's all daggers out again. Then we start off the season well, and it's all and it's all good. Nobody says anything, and then one bad result, it's all daggers again. So you can't have it both ways.
That's football, though, mate. That's the way it goes. It's the same with any team. The buck does stop with the manager. Always does, whether you like it or not. The buck always does stop with the manager. And we talk about wee things again. I mean, Derek, I've said it before. I'm certainly not. I can see what he's trying to do. I'm pleased that we've got Kishinya, and I think it's been something completely different for us. And I'm desperate for him to do well, just so that I can say, get it up, he's all. But at the same time, when you look at the sort of Kenny Miller situation, we can all see it's no working. But he's still getting his starting place in the team, and that's a manager's decision as well.
Yeah.
But again, as you say, we didn't want to go into it too much. The two of us are pro Pedro, if you know what I mean. So we do want him to win, but as I say, there's still a few wee things that I would like you know, him to sort out. You know, especially with the Kenny Miller thing. But we are still early in the season. But just going by the way that the media portray him, the next two games for him are going to be huge, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Just in relation to that, the table as it stands, played 6, won 3, drawn 2, lost 1, scored 13, conceded 8, goal difference plus 5, we're on points 11. Now we had a fortunate kind of weekend in that respect, because a lot of teams never got the results they might have got. We are 3 points behind Aberdeen, who are in second, 5 points behind Celtic, who are obviously top, and we are level on points. Obviously, we're better goal difference than St Johnstone, who are on fourth place. Motherwell got a last minute goal, I think it might have been, at the weekend, and they're sitting fifth on 10 points. The league at this point means really absolutely bugger all, you know. I'm not going to get too much into that. As we've said, Wallace is out for the Old Firm game, and Cranshaw and Rossett are out as well. Declan John...
Oh, Is Rossiter out also, Derek? I didn't know that.
I'll get to that in a minute. Declan, John, Dorans and Jack appear to be all okay, so they might feature tomorrow against Partick Thistle. Just in relation to Nico and Rossiter, I think it's got to the stage now we need to cut our losses, dump them in January, because they're just a luxury we can't afford. Apparently, from what I've heard, Rossiter's on a very good wage. Cranshaw will certainly be on a very good wage, and they've spent more time on the treatment table than probably most of the team combined between them two. It's not good enough. We need to dump them now, I think.
I didn't realise that Rossiter was injured, Derek, because I was hoping possibly that he was going to be the one that was going to replace Kenny Miller. I was hoping that he'd maybe change and play sort of two holding midfielders and him and Jack, you know, for the bigger games, but I had no idea that Rossiter was injured.
Yep, I like his attitude, especially when he came out against Progre, and he said. I think there's a talent there, but he's just too much of, if it's true but he's on a big wage, it's just too much of a wage we can't afford. We need players, if they're getting that kind of money, we need players to be playing, not out in the treatment table, you know, back in 7 to 10 days, but it's actually 5 months down the line. It's no good enough. It's not his fault if he keeps getting these recurring injuries, but again, there is a reason why we got one of, well, what was meant to be one of Liverpool's best prospects for peanuts. Yeah. So
it's a shame, Derek. It's a shame, because I think he is a good player. But
yep. In terms of the games we've got coming up, as I said, we are playing tomorrow. It's Tuesday the 19th of September, away to Partick in the League Cup quarter-final, so it's really a must-win game. That's a 19:45 kick-off. Then we've got the big one on Saturday on the 23rd. It's at home to Celtic in the Premiership. That's a 12 o'clock kick-off. And on Friday the 29th, we are away to Hamilton. And that's in the Premiership as well. Another 19:45 kickoff. We've got a good run of Friday night games, amazingly.
Yeah.
Then there is the European break, where we have arranged a friendly with Benfica in Canada for,
yes,
I think it's the a cup they've just made up, the Eusebio Cup. That's on Friday the 6th of October, and it's a 11 o'clock at night kickoff. And that's
right
at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton, Ontario, which is a 24,000-seater stadium.
Quality.
So hopefully they'll show that on RTV. That could be quite a good one to stay up for.
Yep.
Strange thing about this is it's an artificial pitch that's there just now, and both teams didn't want that, so turf has been laid on top of that for the
quality
game.
Yep. Okay.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yes.
And the next league game, actually, after the 29th, isn't till Friday the 13th of October, which is away to St Johnstone, another 19:45 kickoff.
Okay.
So that brings us in, and we will now go to the boardroom. Right, there's really only one story to talk about in the boardroom this episode, and that's obviously down to EBTs again. We thought we would finish with them, but as usual, certain clubs aren't finished with them.
No.
All stemmed from an apparent SPFL board asking the SFA to review EBT years, which, you know, this announcement came 3 weeks after they actually initially asked for it. The SFA have rejected this claim. They have said there's no point dragging over the coals again. It's a detriment to the actual league. Let's get on with it now and just, you know, get on with making the league better. Weirdly, there appears to have not been any vote from the SPFL board to bring this letter to the SFA in the first place, and it looks as if at this stage, now I can't say for definite, but it looks as if Neil Doncaster may have done this off his own back at the behest of Celtic. So I don't know what's happened there. This apparent meeting had taken place on the 24th or 25th of, I can't remember, was it July, I think it was, or August, I can't remember what the exact date was, but it was the same date where the new board for the SPFL got announced, so I don't think the new board would have agreed to anything like this. Celtic release a statement on the morning of our Dundee game, slamming the SFA stance effectively and stating that all 42 teams want a review. Well, really? Because we're one of the 42 and we don't.
Exactly.
Stuart Millen of Aberdeen had already stated that he didn't want one. Hibs then, a day later, released a statement saying that they don't want one. No other team have came forward that, saying that they want one either, and there's rumours that Alloa say they might have want one, but there's nothing confirmed there. Celtic have released the emails and letters of correspondence to and from the SFA regarding this, and also they apparently have sent letters to the highest echelons of UEFA, which they basically must have told them to fuck off as well. And basically it's now been confirmed that it's Lywell by name, Lywell by nature, because he's been a proven liar, especially in the 42 team issue.
Well, Derek, I call me cynical, Derek, and I said this quite a few times, but going by, now this is just a wee observation that I've had. A few guys at my work who are Celtic fans have been rather annoyed over, especially this season, with the fact that Celtic were in the Champions League last season and are in the Champions League this season. But there doesn't appear to be any major signings. Celtic's biggest signing this year was a loan player from Manchester City, who they had on loan last season also. There's no been any money spent, and the question is, where is all the cash? And to be fair to Peter Lawwell, there is an AGM coming up, you know, with Celtic. So what better to deflect any tricky questions with regards to where the money is and change it to, see, I'm still trying to get a hold of the big bad Rangers bastards for cheating us all the years. Now, as I say, Derek, maybe I'm being cynical, but that looks to me like to be the perfect cop-out for them and their gullible supporters out there to forget about exactly possible problems that they're having at their club at the moment. Make everything out to look as if it's rosy, and take the heat off them by putting it straight back on us. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that as well, Derek, but as soon as I heard that there was an AGM coming up with Celtic, and I've heard a few complaints so far, I thought, you know, what a great way to deflect away for that and just put it back on see what we're doing to get into them and to, you know, try to prove that they cheated us and all this nonsense. That's certainly the way I think it's panned out, Derek, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of people are questioning that either for their side, because, as I say, the attention yet again has been put back onto us.
Well, I think you're probably correct, because I think if my mind serves me right, they've had a history of doing things like that. And granted, their media team is absolutely spot on, because they go into full deflection mode every single time there's a negative media story about them, about any type of subject. The latest one, obviously, was their fan running on the park trying to boot Mbappe in the PSG game.
Derek, you'll find it was a football fan.
You're quite correct.
That ran off. It wasn't a Celtic fan, it was a football fan. And I would like to cast your mind back to the European game that we had when there was the pitch invader, Derek. You know, the boy that ran on with the T-shirt with the Pope on it?
Yeah.
He was a Rangers fan, even though I've never ever known or seen a Rangers fan ever to have a T-shirt with the Pope on it, for some strange reason, I don't know. But again, that was a Rangers fan. We've got into bother when it's somebody on the other side of the city. It is a football fan, rather than he's a bloody Celtic supporter. I thought it was quite incredible when I read that. I don't know if that's what you were about to get into, Derek. I don't know if I've stole your thunder or
not. No, you just completely went off in a different direction there. What I was going to say was the case of, you know, obviously that happened, you know, clear that Celtic are getting brought up in charges over this. This will be their 13th in 6 years, I think, by UEFA. But the next day, there was a media story from apparently the PSG ultras praising Celtic Park and the atmosphere, and everything was great, and they were exchanging football tops and scarves.
Of course they
despite the fact that PSG are now out of getting a charge against them for their fans ripping up seats.
What do you smell, Derek?
I think I can smell shite. Yes, I can definitely smell shite.
Exactly. Yeah, as you say, their PR machine, Derek, the way that they have the Scottish media, you know, pandering to them is absolutely brilliant, and fair play to them, do you know? But it's becoming more transparent, you know, with every story that comes out. It is quite incredible, and we'll wait and see what does come of the Celtic AGM, because I'm sure there must be one coming up soon, and it will be full deflection mode, like I said,
yep,
straight onto us, and any questions about where all their cash is going. And I've heard a lot of rumblings for different people that they have, you know, they are having some problems cash wise, but of course that will be rubbished in the media, and all the bullshit again. I mean, when you're talking about the media, apparently Celtic were going to match the £30 million that Manchester City wanted for Patrick Roberts. I mean, as if they were, but apparently, you know, according to the media, they were quite prepared to pay that amount of money, but Manchester City said no. What a lot of cash. £30 million, if you had £30 million to spend on one player, would you buy Patrick Roberts? I don't fucking think so.
No.
You know, I'm not slating the guy. He's maybe a really good player. But £30 million, absolutely no chance. But again, just another shit story in the newspapers. But again, it doesn't get picked up, Derek. They didn't get... If there was anything like that coming for us, it would be plastered all over the newspapers. It would be all on social media, everything. But that's just the way the media is.
It would be ridiculed the way it was when we were going to maybe try and sign Messi.
Yes.
So it's, you know, that was completely ridiculed when there was a genuine case that we might have at the time. So getting back to the EBTs there, you know, Aberdeen fans, there's apparently a fans group who say they have 2,000 members, say that they've 2/3 of their members want action. So really you're only talking about, what, 1,300 people want action of their fan base.
So that's basically the Aberdeen fan base, then, to be honest. It's not just a fans group, that is just the Aberdeen fan base. No, I heard David Edgar saying, you know, it's, you know, a way of these supporters trying to make themselves relevant, Derek, because really we didn't really get a toss. And if that's all we're talking about is just them, obviously you're going to get the lunatic Celtic fans out there that are, you know, all jump on the bandwagon, but I really don't think anybody else gives two fucks, to be perfectly honest with you. And the fact that the official, you know, the club's officials have came out for Aberdeen and Hibs and all these other clubs to say, no, we are just wanting to move on now, they can all see that there was nothing in it as well. It's just, it shows you how much a farce the whole thing is, it really does.
Well, I mean, Hibs fans apparently unveiled a banner at the weekend saying 13,000 season tickets, zero opinions heard. Well, I think Hibs fans, given their history of what they've done and got away with, they should be, you know, keep it tight-lipped.
Exactly.
And that's the one thing that really annoys me. And I think there was a Dunfermline fan, maybe a high-profile one, says, was it not Dunfermline himself came out and said something similar, that, you know, we would be in a stupid position given the fact that we've had an administration event as well, you know, why would we want to call for any investigation?
Yeah.
We've had our own issues that way and might have, you know, benefited from things. And the biggest farce of the lot is Hearts fans coming out. I had an argument with Hearts fan. I basically told them, he was all over the place with his argument. He was using one thing to back up another, and it was just not making sense. So I told him to make a, you know, make a clear, valid point or otherwise fuck off, and he blocked me. So, but I mean, Hearts fans coming away with shite now.
Exactly.
They are the biggest bunch of hypocrites out if they have anything with what went on with Vladimir Romanov. So,
and Derek, let's be honest, I work with a few Hearts fans as well, and you know, the argument that I had with them was, you know, they were trying to have a wee pop, and the thing that I says to them is, you know, over the years, how many times have our club bailed your club out a major financial bother by buying the vast majority of your players off you at huge inflated prices over the years as well, to which there was absolutely, you know, no response whatsoever, because they kind of fucking knew, you know, that we've helped that club out I don't know how many times, and these fans have got short memories, they really, really have.
Yep. Next person I want to get on here in relation to the whole thing is my old pal Tom English, I really should stop tweeting him because he's just making an arse of himself and he wants the attention.
Derek, you love it, mate. You absolutely love it.
Because he digs himself a bigger hole every time.
You should ask him if he wants to come on the pod. he probably would.
He probably would.
He's
basically said, you know, in no uncertain terms, that he wants an investigation into Lord Nimmo Smith. And then he claimed he didn't see that. Right, so listen to this.
I'd also like to see a proper investigation into Lord Nimmo Smith and perhaps documents that were not presented before he formed his conclusions. I think all of that stuff needs to be looked at.
Apparently he never said that.
Are you sure that's actually him? It sounded a wee bit like Mrs. Brown.
It was actually just me doing my impressions of an Irishman, that's all it was.
No, Derek, I know for a fact that that person did sound Irish, I know that's the you that's doing that. So, that in itself, Derek, is absolutely hilarious that he said that. Hilarious. I mean, that is, you know, questioning someone of such high profile, questioning his credentials big time. Only somebody like Tom English would come out and question that.
But it's the point.
Absolutely ridiculous.
It's not just that, though. It's not just that. It's the fact that before even Lord Nimmo Smith had gave a verdict before, he was backing him up, saying on live on radio and on Twitter, saying that, you know, this guy, you know, he's above reproach. He's got to, you know, whatever he says goes. So it's like, well, make up your mind, Tom, really.
See, when you're saying you have that wee spat when he denied that, it's a pity that you couldn't actually send him that sound clip just to see what he would come away with.
Oh, well, several people have, though. That's the whole point. He's still in full denial mode. I mean, he tried to... I said he was in arguing with someone else about it, and he said he never said that, and I said, that's not what you said. And then he's replied straight away back to me, and I was in the airport in Tenerife coming back home at this point, and he said, we need to talk about this later, pal. I'm at the Champions League game now. I said, didn't he bother your arse, Tom, because, you know, you wouldn't have replied in the first place if you wanted to. So he was just trying to, you know, be smart and say, oh, look, I'm at a team who's in the Champions League here. That's all he was trying to do. He's a fanny, simple as. So no more conversations with him. The one thing I've got to say, though, and I'll give him a wee bit of praise despite them being absolutely fucking useless, is Stuart Regan. I felt he gave an exceptional interview to against a barrage of questions, questioned him several times over stuff he's clarified several times before and in the same interview. So he was very clear and he had a very strong stance on where the SFA stood. However, they are investigating us being granted a UEFA licence in 2011. Now, that's the compliance officer that's doing that. Why? This is 6 years ago this was given.
Yes.
Not sure what punishments that can be involved in this, if anything is found we've done not right. Somebody said maybe fines, but then is that to the new co or is that to the old co? Nobody knows.
No.
And surely then, if they've granted us a UEFA licence based on something, they're partly to blame for this as well, for granting us the licence in the first place. So,
yes.
Fuck knows. I really don't.
I know. Incredible, Derek. There are people out there grasping at straws. It's as if they've got a big list of stuff and they're having to put a wee line through it and move on to the next thing. Right, we'll try and get them on that. Shit, we can't do that. Right, we'll try the next thing. It's like a big list they've got, mate. It's getting tiresome now, to be honest with you.
Yep. And apparently some Mads fans group called the SFSA claim to have 70,000 members. Yeah, this is the thing. And a lot of people...
Well, there are no Aberdeen fans then.
Well, I don't know. There's some sort of fans-based thing that want, you know, the governance of the game sorted out. I don't even know.
70,000 supporters. There's no even, you know... There'll be none of them will be Rangers supporters. No. So let's be honest, is there 70,000 football supporters out there each week if you take away the Rangers support Derek, probably.
Well,
not.
The point is that they've apparently, including 70,000 members, and a few Rangers fans are based on when they first started, this SFASA started out, they had some sort of survey monkey about governance of football and a load of questions to Scottish football fans, and a few Rangers fans had filled that out at the time, and apparently they've checked with this SFASA, or whatever you're going to call them, and they're included as members when they never signed up to any membership.
Right,
so
okay.
There's a bit of false representation going on there, I think. So we'll need to see where that goes, but it seems to be that they jumped on the bandwagon with the whole wanting to get involved in fan crowdfunding for an investigation and all that kind of thing. So they're certainly not impartial, put it that way. You know what side they go on. I'm all for some sort of review of Scottish football governments, because I think most Rangers fans would agree that the what's his name, the guy who is in charge, Doncaster, is a complete idiot, and we all, I think all fans universally agree that SFA are not fit for purpose. They have done certain things, you know, through various things, not just the whole Rangers debacle. I mean, bearing in mind, they've issued punishments to us before even any guilt was found or anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So
yep.
I think we would have welcomed that, but what we don't welcome is the fact that it's just solely focused on the EBT years, and that's what basically the call is for.
Yep.
We don't want that. Rangers have played a blinder in this one, whether it's been just because through indecision or tactical, but they've never said anything about this. There was a lot of calls from fans to release statement after the Celtic won. Unfortunately, we're getting into this fucking statement culture, which is a bit of a joke, but we've stayed silent, and the media reporting, we've wrote a furious letter to the SFA wanting answers to why this review has even been talked about. Until that's been confirmed by Rangers, which it hasn't yet, I'm going to hold my counsel on that. So we'll just need to wait and see. That's obviously going to rumble on. We're going to have, you know, as you said, Celtic AGM talking about stuff like that. So we'll need to kind of move on here, because we've talked about it long enough. Right, so a bit of a change to the schedule. We still have the classic match coming up, but I'm doing Dave's job this week, so here it is, the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Yes, Dave, pretty poor show from you this episode. What's your excuses?
Derek, I've gave you my excuses already. Come on, didn't he give me a nonsense? Come on now.
Yes, apparently Dave was too busy in the 18 days since we had the last podcast to get his finger out and get the one organised.
You're really making me sound like a lazy bastard, aren't you?
Well, you are, though.
That's just at work, though, Derek.
Aye. Yes, I'll forgive you this time, Dave.
Yes, no, I have had valid reasons to do so. It does revolve around holidays, and I know I get a lot of stick for that with regards to stuff like that, but no, it has been rather hectic recently, and with you being away, also me working night shift and not having a lot of sleep, and basically having a very, very busy schedule with children, which you will appreciate in the next few years. Mm-hmm. It has been rather difficult. So this once I'm going to go fly completely blind here, Derek, and let you describe a certain classic match that I can remember. I know the one that you're going to do, but I can't remember much about the actual the game. I know how it sort of panned out, how it started and how it ended. So I will let you carry on and have your wee bit of glory. On you go, mate.
This might mean that I take this over from now on, you know that. If I do such a good job and we get feedback from it, I might need to do it.
Okay.
Yes. So, 22nd of July 1998, UEFA Cup first round qualifier, leg one. It was against semi-professional Irish side Shelburne.
Yes.
Now, Kelly had apparently played them the year previously, and they had to hang on to win 3-2, so we were kind of unsure what it was going to be. Now, the game was due to be played at Shelbourne's ground in Dublin. However, due to fears about sectarian violence and involving a game from us from 14 years previous in Dublin, it forced the League of Ireland side to seek an alternative venue. That venue was Tranmere Rovers' ground at Prenton Park. Now, this ground apparently held nearly 17,000 seats at this time, and they were an English First Division side at the time, but apparently only 6,000 fans attended. So not too sure what the issue was there. It was a game I watched on Eurosport in Spain. I was on holiday at the time, and I was only, I think, about 12. Mm-hmm. And the big thing was, it was Dick Advocaat's first game in charge.
Yes, yep. We were absolutely delighted when Advocaat came in, Derek. Someone of his standing to become the Rangers manager, well known throughout the world, spent a hell of a lot of money as well when he came in, and we were expecting huge, huge things. At that point,
yep. I mean, he had brought in before this game had started. He managed to bring in Arthur Newman, who was out injured because I think he was still suffering for the injury he got to his eye when the fan punched him. What he heard when he was leaving his club.
Yep.
Gabriel Amato, Giovanni van Bronckhorst, Andrei Kanchelskis, Lionel Charbonnet, and Rod Wallace. Now, at that time, that was 20.2 million pounds spent.
Yes.
At the time, and then later on that year he would go on to bring Daniel Prodan, Hendry, Stefan Givarsh, Neil McCann and Stefan Kloss. But anyway, we lined up for this game: Antti Niemi in goals, Sergio Perini, Lorenzo Amoruso, who was a captain, Gordon Petrich, Giovanni van Bronckhorst, Rino Gattuso, Barry Ferguson, Jonas Tern, Jord Alberts, David Graham. He made his debut on this game, and he only made another 4 appearances after this game, and he was left by the end of November, so clearly made an impression there.
Yes.
And to round out the attack force was Gordon Dewey. On the subs bench were Lionel Charbonnet, Scott Wilson, Gabriel Amato, Craig Moore, Tony Vidmar, Ian Ferguson and Jonathan Johansson. As I said, it was a semi-professional outfit Shelburne had, and the only notable player that I could see was future Hibs manager Pat Fenlon.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes, he would become involved in a goal as well, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay.
So, we started off, games kicked off. The video I got wasn't the greatest, it only really showed the goals. But anyway, with only 7 minutes gone, Shelburne had their first attack.
Seven is Baker. That's a decent ball by Baker, and it's an in goal. Unbelievable start, and Rangers go behind, and it's Perini who put the ball past Niemi.
Van Bronckhorst lost the ball in midfield, broke down the right hand side and floated in a hopeful ball into the box, didn't find any Shelburne attackers and took a bounce right in front of Perini. He appeared to be caught in two minds whether to head it out for a corner or to try and pass it back to the keeper, and what did he do? He put it in his own net. Absolute
yes.
Calamity straight away.
Mm-hmm.
For us, really, chances came few and far between for us. We failed to get a grip of the game, largely. The only real one chance came when Gordon Dewey got the ball going forward, cut it back inside the defender, hit a tight angle shot which forced a good save out of the keeper. And then things went from bad to worse on the 42nd minute.
Well, McCarthy goes in, and it's bobbing around, and it's a goal, and it's Rutherford. Absolutely incredible. Rangers defence all over the place once again, and they were stood like statues, and there must have been two or three attempts. McCarthy came charging in, the keeper was absolutely nowhere, Morley couldn't get his foot on it, and Rutherford did, and there could be real history in the making here.
There was a deep corner which was whipped into the back post, found the head of the Shelburne attacker who headed it down in the middle of the 6-yard box. By this time, Niemi was already down on the ground after trying to save the initial cross. He was actually taken out by a jumping attacker. There was no foul given though. However, he got a slight skiff to the ball which sent it into the path of the striker who blasted it in from 3 yards. So, absolute calamity again. Really shocking defending, which is really a feature of our team now.
Yeah,
so.
I know.
Half-time came. Obviously, something had to change drastically to get a grip in the game. Advocaat took Gattuso and Graham off at half-time, and in came Amato and Jonathan Johansson. We did start off a bit brighter, did force another great save out the Shelburne keeper. It was the two subs doing the business this time, where Amato took the ball down the left-hand side of the fence, set up Johansson, who had a rasping shot, which had the keeper using all his agility and reflexes to make the save. And then shortly after, on the 58th minute, we were gobsmacked and we went 3-0 down.
Goes Morley into the penalty area! Morley, number three for Shelburne. And what a marvellous finish, really coolly done by Morley. And it's going from bad and bad to worse and worse for Glasgow Rangers.
Pat Fenlon played a great ball through to their attacker, which left our defence nowhere to be seen. Took the ball into the box. Niemi came charging out as there was only the two defenders sprinting back, and the Shelbourne player dinked it over Niemi and into the back of the net. Absolutely shell-shocked at this stage. You know, 58 minutes, 3-0 down to a semi-professional outfit. I just spent 20-odd million on players, and, you know, what the hell was happening here? This is European qualification, for God's sake.
At that stage, Derek, I can remember just, you know, the way you're talking. I can remember at that stage saying to myself, you know, we've done nothing in this game at all. Surely these players that we've spent all this money on can, you know, step it up a gear. And, you know, thankfully, after that sort of horror show, they did step it up after that. But I was kind of saying to myself, we're 3-0 down here. We really need to try and score at least two goals now to get, you know, to give us a chance in the second leg to get back. But just being so disappointed that these big name players were, you know, playing so poorly at that stage.
Yep. Well, a minute later, we did get what we thought was going to be our only lifeline, and we did actually score.
To get them back into game and resurrect the season. Albert, and he does it. Sends Goff the wrong way, and maybe that will provide the spark of inspiration that Rangers have needed.
Albert's floated the corner in, which was clearly handballed in the box. Yellow card to the Shelbourne player, and it was a penalty us, which Albert slotted home comfortably. So we thought, yes, thank God, we've at least got an away goal, can take that back to Ibrox. On the 64th minute, we made our final sub of the night when Jonas Tern came off and Ian Ferguson came on. He was only on the park less than a minute and he earned himself a yellow card with an absolute crunching tackle on one of the Shelbourne midfielders. You know, he was probably lucky it wasn't a red, actually. And then really what followed for the next 11 minutes, starting on the 72nd minute, was one of the most incredible comebacks I've seen from us. Granted, the level of opposition, but you still got to score at the end of the day.
Well, McCarthy and Scully combining, and it's back across the edge of the area, and it's off the line. It's still not clear, and is it over? Yes, it is. Skidding across there, and take your pick as to just who got the final touch on that.
Well, certainly I don't think you could argue with Amato. He's definitely claiming it, but... you know, good goal line clearance there, we see that, and Amato really does strike it, and yeah, you have got to give it to
definitely
him.
A right decision, definitely the right decision.
Certainly was, and Amato, good finish, and he'll be happy, that's his first goal for his new club.
On the 72nd minute, as I said, a corner was whipped in deep, Amato saved the ball from going out, and he headed it back into the centre of the box. A rocket of a first-time shot was cleared off the line, it came back out to Amato, who hit a shot, which was deflected off the defender, and it went just over the line before being cleared by the keeper, but the goal was given, so fantastic, went 3-2. As Dave said, we were hoping at least for two away goals when we got them there. But little did we know what was to come. Just over 60 seconds later, we got the equaliser.
Two away goals, remember, we now have. Here's Van Bronckhorst. Got to go for the return, is he? Van Bronckhorst, he's still there, Van Bronckhorst! 3-0!
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst got the ball in midfield and charged forward, passed to Amato, who had his back to goal, held up the ball brilliantly. Van Bronckhorst kept running at the box, an absolute genius back heel pass from Amato to Van Bronckhorst. Lovely first touch to control the ball and a second touch to shoot the ball in the near post past the keeper. A fantastic goal, lovely back heel from Amato.
Yep, and back into the game at that stage.
Yep. Incredibly, we went 4-3 in front in the 81st minute.
Petric. Johansson, they're not tight on Johansson, they're allowing him to get control of the ball and run at them. Johansson, that's another good ball! 4-3, and it's Amato!
It was a great 40-yard long ball up to Johansson on the left wing by Gordon Petrac. Petric, Johansson controls the ball, takes on the defender, gets the ball onto the touchline, puts an inch-perfect cross into the box. Amato didn't even have to move, heads the ball into the back of the net from 6 yards. So, some fans jumped onto the park, gave Amato big hugs from that. Incredible vision all round. Yep. Fantastic from Johansson. And really, the astonishing night was rounded up on the 83rd minute when Alberts converted another spot kick.
And once again, it will be the number 11, Alberts, sends him the wrong way again. Rangers 5, Shelburne 3.
The corner came in and it was the exact same defender, it was the exact same Shelburne player with another clear handball inside the box, and amazingly he wasn't given a second yellow card for it, which for this exact same thing he was in the first place. So
yeah.
I think there was a wee bit of luck of the Irish there and a wee bit of dodgy refereeing, as I said. Yeah. You know, again, Albert's converted a spot kick, fantastic all-round night. You know, it was something, I don't think we've had any sort of comeback like that before, have we?
The only sort of game that I think it wasn't really a comeback, Derek, but a sort of against all odds, was the cup final against St Mirren when we were down to 9 men and we managed to score and win 1-0. I think that sort of, you know, that sort of, you know, the odds were completely against us and we still managed to pull something out of the bag. I think that's about the only thing that's came close to that. I remember watching it, Derek, and being sort of half and half delighted that we, you know, the result and the comeback, but really, really disappointed with the fact that we were 3-0 down against a really, really poor team. But it was a new team. There was a lot of new players in there. And I think that I was really excited about Amato at that point after seeing him. You know, he basically came on and completely changed the game for us and, you know, looked really, 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 you know, a quality player. So, that kind of does, the way you were describing it, I'm getting a vision in my head of, you know, how the goals were and how the game sort of went on. And as you say, absolutely fantastic comeback that.
Yep, and we did win the second leg comfortably 2-0, making it 7-3 in aggregate. That was the same year we played Parma in in the UEFA Cup, and we obviously got beat off them. But it was also basically going into the second qualifying round, we played Polk Salonika. And then I went to my first competitive game at Ibrox in the round one second leg tie against Beitar Jerusalem.
Oh, excellent, Derek. I was at that game as well.
Aye, I was in the club deck for that game, so it was a great experience.
I seem to remember their supporters being absolutely mental and singing like the whole game, like one of the best away supports that I've seen, actually, Beitar Jerusalem. If it's that game that I can remember, they had like a couple of guys on drums and they were there all game. It was like an indoor concert at one stage because they were just singing the whole time, and they had a rendition of I don't know how many sort of dodgy 80s pop songs that they were actually able to change the words to make it sound as if it was today with their team. There was a lot of, it was absolutely mental, but no, I can remember that. But as you say, going back to the game, if you want to see a fantastic comeback, then, you know, that's the game to look at, definitely.
Yes. So we will now go into the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
A few bits and pieces to cover here as well. There's an apparent new home and away top being leaked online, however, it appears to be faked. There were Pumas with 32 red on it, buttons in the collar with a wee bit of white bobbling at the top shoulders, but apparently it's been confirmed as a fake. So,
yeah.
And the shorts in the picture as well, they looked like they had either been shrunk in the wash or they were like size 0 shorts or something. So
no, they were like these shorts that used to wear when Graham Souness first came to Rangers, and you know, the tiny, tiny shorts that used to wear. Yes. That's what it looked like.
I've had these shorts since 1982. They did have an underpant lining, but it's perished. Yeah. They've taken a bit of a pounding over the years. If I can get me some new ones, please.
Next one, safe standing, Club 1872. I've confirmed it won't be in place for next year. The club have completed their feasibility study of it. I believe several issues were, or several options were put in this feasibility study about where to put it if we go ahead with it. Again, I've outlined my place on this several times before, and we did get somebody commenting on, asking, clarification, I think it was, on our Facebook page about it, about our objections to it. It's not that I object about it, I just think it's, we've got a lot more to be dealing with now than worrying about funding for safe standing. I mean, it's not going to be getting the club any more money in, because I think you would need to reduce the ticket prices for these bit, because how can you charge for a seating bit when you're going to be probably standing all game?
I know, but the choice is there though, Derek. Aye. You could sit if you wanted to. So,
but you know exactly it is going to be an all standing bit. So,
aye.
So I'm not really wanting to get in the debate again, because no. It's a mute point now, because it's a couple of years off at least. Leave it with the club. There's no point arguing about it over Facebook. Yeah. People have got a lot of opinions over it about whether moving seats. So
I think a lot of it comes down to, oh well, they've got it, so we want it. Aye. Which is a pretty poor argument. But if it was going to make the stadium, the atmosphere much better, then great, that's there. But I've got my reservations about it as well, Derek, whether that would be the case or not. So I don't know.
Okay. next thing here. Obviously, we never got Jamie Walker from Hearts, which I'm quite glad at, to be honest. I'm glad we took a harsh stance on it and not paid over the odds for a player that we can, basically sign up in a pre-contract in January, get him for nothing in the summer, or pay even less in the January window for him. So the weird thing though that Craig Levein came out and said, and this is, I'm quoting him here, "I don't want to go into too much detail, but if I was Jamie, I'd be a little bit disappointed that a lot of promises were made to him weren't kept, and not from our club. To me, surely then he's implying that we've tapped up his player, and if that's the case, why has there not been any complaint then?" So I think he's just talking utter bullshit.
Yeah, it's. I was the same as you, Derek. I was wanting us to go and get him, but I was the other way inclined that, if Hearts were going to try and hold us to ransom, then fuck them. And we'll go out in January, we'll get him on a free transfer. The other player that was hoping that we were going to do is the man that keeps on scoring in the Premier League was Louis Moult. That was like the other one that we said, I was really disappointed that we didn't get him, because I think he'd have been a brilliant addition to the team. But again, we don't know if there's maybe something similar is going to happen in January with him also, Derek, and because I don't know if he's also in the last year of his contract as well, so who knows. But again, we'll just have to wait and see. But like you, I think we've maybe done the right thing, the sensible thing with Walker. And there was a lot of talk, if he's not going to sign a new contract, he'll not get his game. Well, he is getting his game for Hearts. Apparently, he played really well on Saturday as well. So just hope that he keeps on showing the promise that he is at Hearts and keeps playing well. And then by the time he comes to us, he'll be a seasoned player ready to go straight into the team,
Yep. Other football news here. We've got Archie Knox has released his autobiography. It's called The School of Hard Knocks.
Didn't know that. All right, okay.
So it certainly could be a good interesting
read there. Yeah, definitely.
Now, Billy Davis has came out and claims he was not given the Rangers job after McCoist left due to a smear campaign on Rangers forums. Claims he's been gathering evidence for 3 years now. Okay. Yeah.
Derek, as I say, you know that I've met him a few times. He was always a very, very nice man while talking to me, but I always had this feeling that he was exceptionally paranoid about everything, especially about the media and stuff like that. And the more and more that I'm reading about him, the more that I think to myself, it's maybe a good job that we didn't get him. And a very good coach, a very good manager, but I think there's maybe too much going on behind the scenes with him than we would want. So another bizarre one there, but there you go.
And I've heard it wouldn't be allegedly wouldn't be darts competitions that would be getting held in terms of parties either.
allegedly, Derek, allegedly.
I better take that out.
That's what you see. Oh dear, dear.
I'm right, definitely okay. Keeping that in now. Right, and the last piece of normal news I've got here, and if you can call it normal, Big Ammo is going to be an Italian celebrity master chef.
Oh, is he? Oh,
yes. So hopefully he'll make something with Bailey's and it'll be so creamy.
A lovely Bailey's ice cream dessert. Superb.
Right, so, out of control pensioners fined for their hotel rampage.
Okay.
Staff and guests were forced to flee after two out-of-control pensioners rampaged through a Highland Perthshire resort hotel, a court heard. Robert Fergus, 72, ran naked with a pair of scissors in the public reception of the McDonald Lock Ranch Rannoch Hotel and smashed a pane of glass. His wife, Ruth... Ruth? His wife, Ruth, 69... threatened to shoot a staff member after reacting badly to alcohol she consumed earlier.
Threatened to shoot the staff?
Yes.
Okay.
Both were accused of acting as if they were out of control. He was observed to have a pair of scissors. Mrs. Fergus said, "I'm going to get a gun and shoot you."
What kind of alcohol were they drinking?
God knows. The sheriff told, "I don't think I need to tell you it's a very, very sorry state of affairs. I have no doubt you will regret this for the rest of your life."
I don't think they're big enough fuck to be
honest with you. Yes, as you do, run naked through a hotel with a pair of scissors.
Aye, with a pair of scissors, aye.
Yes. Last one here. Couple hospitalised after man gets his head stuck in his wife's vagina. A couple was transported to the hospital in a very awkward position last night after a man somehow got his head stuck in a wife's vagina during a strange sexual game. Tom and Janice Morrison, a young couple from the small town of Greensboro in Alabama, called 911 around 10 p.m. last night to ask for an ambulance. Samantha Irvin, the operator who took the call, says she thought it was a joke when they explained the situation. I don't know how he actually... How did he call?
That's what I was going to say. He went last...
One of the paramedics transported the couple claims they were lying naked on their bed and partially covered in blood. The couple were transported to the nearby hospital where doctors were able to separate the couple. Miss Morrison suffered from severe internal bleeding but is now stable, where her husband has suffered only a few scratches and bruises. According to doctors, both could also suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome.
What do you think he was looking for, Derek?
I don't know. I dread to think.
I don't even know how they would even contemplate coming up with that idea for that.
According to some data, the Morrisons are the first couple to be hospitalised for head stuck in vagina cavity since October 2007. So it's happened before.
What the fucking thing of it? I don't even know what would come into your head to think. Aye, let's just see if I can squeeze that up there anymore.
Sausage and close. That's all I can really say then.
Definitely. Definitely. We've got a few IQs, just a couple to get through here. I kind of forgot about it, so I put the question out there for anybody to get back to us quite late on tonight. So we've had a couple back. First one we've got from Johnny Patterson at Big Ugly Roll. He says, "Can you explain our inconsistencies?" I don't know what he means by inconsistencies, whether he's talking about a few good results and then the draws and stuff like that. I take it that's what he's meaning, Derek. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to add to what we've, already been discussing.
I thought it's a strange one because they just seemed to turn off. They didn't seem to be up for the game, to be honest, and I felt Alves was a wee bit off. Obviously, he wasn't the greatest against Partick. I don't know, it's hard to say. And if I could say, then I would be the Rangers manager right now. So it's baffling, to be honest. I can't make head nor tail about it. I mean, what's your opinion on it?
Like I said there, the game against Ross County, I thought we actually played quite well, Derek. It was strange watching the game live, you know, because we were terrified that, you know, we were going to lose silly goals. And we did. We actually played well. We played very well against Dundee at home. In that game, I thought we battled enough, but it just seemed to be the sort of lackadaisical sort of defending. But Alves, which I'm really quite surprised, because he's obviously a top professional. But again, you know, hopefully that's a one-off in that game. But he was certainly found wanting, especially for the free kick, because I keep saying I think that whole free kick would have been avoided if he'd have just a step forward and put his head through the ball instead of leaving it for Cardoso. And then also with the wall, he was really lackadaisical with that as well. So I don't know. It comes back to defending again. There's a lot of folk are complaining about the fullbacks no being able to defend with Tav and stuff. No great in defence. It's just a strange one, Derek, because we are going from feeling quite confident about the team and thinking that we're going in the right direction to that. But the one thing I will say, though, is if that had been last season, it would have been, we battled and got a draw one game, and then we got beat the next game, and then we scraped a win that game with one goal, and we scraped another win with one goal, and then we got beat again. So we have only been beat once this season, and we should never have been, and that was in the Hibs game. So that's the positives I'm taking from it. It's just that lack of consistency for us, Derek. That is, just seems to be what the problem is with us just now. We can't just seem to, you know, go and score a couple of goals and hang on to it. There's always something there. So, as you say, it's a strange one. And going by the next two games, the game to tomorrow night's huge, and then the Celtic game. I think if we'd have been a bit more consistent and we'd have beat Hearts, and with a beat Partick there, I think, you know, the confidence would have been at an all-time high going into the next two games. But unfortunately, it's still, we've all got that doubt in the back of our mind, haven't we?
The thing is, I don't think we've been playing particularly bad. There's been a great improvement from last year, obviously, and we would have lost a lot of these games. I think it's just the lack of ability up front to shoot and get it on target, and also just a couple of defensive lapses. So we'll just need to wait and see in that one. What's the next one anyway?
The next one is, this is from Paul at Seas from the We Welcome the Chase pod. Always nice to hear from you guys. They've read out a few of your questions as well. So Paul at Seas says, with Wallace and possibly John being out for Saturday, I didn't know that John was a doubt, but with Wallace and possibly John being out, do we risk Hodgson at left back or recall Bierman from the development squad?
I noticed that a couple of other people have said that Bierman might be in crutches. So
all right, so that's not a thing either then.
Well,
so
either, even if that's not the case, I think you've kind of got to go with Hodgson, I think. As much as I wouldn't say he's the greatest of left backs, but I think you've maybe really no option. He's probably the one with the most experience. At the end of the day, he's an international cap player. He's played in the European Championships for Northern Ireland, so, you know, he's not bad then, you know, is he? He's maybe just got, maybe the times he's played with us, I think he was maybe playing with players who their attitudes had gone, I think, previously. So you've maybe got to let him give a chance if Wallace is going to be gone. You can't put Bierman into a situation like that just out of the blue. When he played the last time, he had a run with the team, so you can't just bring him out for the blue for that.
Do you change the formation, Derek, to accommodate, you know, the fact that we might not have a left back? Do you change it and go with a back three, or do you think that would be a total disaster?
I think that would be a disaster, to be honest. I think you would need to play a very high line. I don't think, you know, when you do that, if they do manage to slip by us, we've not got the pace at the back to catch up. So you're on a hiding to nothing for there. I've never agreed with a back three, certainly not for us, because we've never had pacey defenders like that to do that.
Would you change the formation slightly
and this is what my thinking would be. And if we did it, I would actually do it for tomorrow's game to see how it panned out. But would you think that we would have better success playing a 4-2-3-1 formation and taking Kenny Miller out of the team and putting another midfielder in to let Graham Dorans get forward as a more attacking midfielder? Would you try that?
Certainly, I mean, it's worth a try, especially for tomorrow. Again, tomorrow's a must-win game again, though, so it's... Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work for every single time you play, though. That's the thing. Celtic might see that and change it about again and combat that. So
that is the formation they stick with as well. And I'm not just saying that because of that's what they do, Derek, but I just feel with the players that we have at our disposal, then that would possibly be a better way to go with the players that we've got, because obviously you've got Peña as well in there as Dorans. You've also got Cranchar, that could come in as the attacking midfielder also. Going back to what we said about Miller, I think it would maybe work, but again, it's something that we'll have to wait and see. If it's going to happen, then I would want it to happen for tomorrow, but that'll be interesting to see what happens though if that is the case and John is out also, but I didn't know he was, but there you go. But moving on to the last question, which is from Mr. D. Harry at 54 beats 44. Would Mick Hucknall's scrotum unlock Neil Lennon's new iPhone 10?
Oh my God.
I think it would, to be perfectly honest with you.
I think it wouldn't, because Neil Lennon's face is uglier than probably what his scrum looks like, so I don't know.
I actually feel sorry for Neil Lennon's new iPhone 10, to be perfectly honest with you. I can't imagine opening up that as the ID thing that unlocks your phone is staring into his eyes. That's actually really quite bad for that. I hope the latest technology they've got, because if there's anything that's going to fucking break your iPhone screen, it's going to be him glaring at it. So I know, very good Mr. D. Harry, quality stuff there. But no, that's the IQs done for this week, Derek. I know it was short notice. I'll have to, before we do the next pod, we'll put it out a couple of days before and retweet it just to see what else that we get in. But thank you for all the questions fired in, and again, big shout out to the guys at the We Welcome the Chase podcast. Absolutely hilarious stuff by the guys. Really enjoy the pod. Keep it up.
Yes, so as ever, we've got our Facebook, which is facebook.com/iReadyPod. Twitter is @iReadyPod. We've got our Instagram as well, which is iReadyPodcast. We do have a website as well, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com. So check them all out. Our podcasts are obviously on the website as well, previous ones and up-to-date ones. We will be back at some point once Dave has come back from his jollies.
I don't even want to think about coming back, Derek. Not the offence, but I just want to think about going. That's the only thing that's in my brain now. I won't get to see the up-and-coming Old Firm game, Derek. That's the only thing. Probably the first Old Firm game that I think I've ever missed. But going by the time difference and the fact that on that actual day, we have got things booked didn't know, so I'm going to completely miss it. So I'll be checking my phone constantly to find out what the score and stuff is, but I won't get to see it. So I just want to, everybody that's gone, hopefully we get the victory there that we've been so longing for big time. And even though I'll be away in Florida, I'll still be checking the score and cheering us on. So
yes, so all I can say is thanks for listening and goodbye.
Yes, take care. We are the people. All the best.